Join us March 13th live from Barcelona for the first ever International Cannabis Awards, celebrating the greatest contributors to the growth and evolution throughout the cannabis industry. Vote for your favorite growers, breeders, artisans, and innovators. Industry superstars whose expertise and creativity have pushed the boundaries of cannabis worldwide. Join us live from anywhere in the world as we unveil the winners from Best Cultivation to Best Online Seed Store. Featuring live performances, celebrity guests, plus appearances and insight from luminaries Luna Stower, Nika T, Kyle Cushman, and more. March 13th, live from Barcelona, Spain, the International Cannabis Awards. Be a part of cannabis history. Log on and cast your vote today.
Hello, growers, green thumbs, and cannabis aficionados. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Grow Weed at Home with Kyle Cushman. This is episode 24, and as always, we're here to share the latest tips, tricks, and science to help you grow the dankest, healthiest cannabis right from the comfort of your home. Today, we're diving deep into the world of plant science, and let me tell you, it's going to be a fascinating journey. We've talked a lot about the practical aspects of growing, from picking the right strain to the perfect harvest time, but today, we're going beneath the surface, down to the cellular level, to really understand what makes our cannabis plants tick. And who better to guide us on this scientific expedition than a true expert in the field? I'm thrilled to welcome a very special guest to the show, Justin from Shark Mouse Farms. For those of you who haven't had the pleasure of visiting Shark Mouse Farms, prepare to be amazed. Justin and his team are pioneers in innovative growing techniques, blending the art and science of cannabis cultivation in ways that push the boundaries of what we thought was possible. Together, Justin and I will dive into the mysteries of photosynthesis and unravel the secrets behind the nutrients and environmental factors that our cannabis plants love so much. Whether you're a novice grower or a seasoned cultivator, there's going to be something new and exciting for everyone. So, get comfortable, grab your notebooks, and maybe a fresh cup of coffee, because we're about to embark on a journey through the incredible world of plant science. Let's get growing! Well, look who we have here. If I don't feel like I'm interviewing like my nephew or a cousin or like maybe even a younger version of myself or something. Justin from Shark Mouse Farms, thank you for being with us today.
Mr. Cushman, thank you so much for having me on. I'm ecstatic and excited to be here. I've been a fan and a follower for a long time, and having the opportunity to have a conversation with you today is just super exciting to me. So thank you very much. I look forward to it.
Well, thank you very much. I want to say that I've definitely followed your personal come up from, I think it was, you know, like 20K up to now, you're up at like 90K. In fact, we have the same following, and I've only been on for 10 plus years. So congratulations on that.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate the recognition for, you know, that climb. That it does, it kind of feels like an overnight sort of success, and it did happen super quickly. But what's odd about that is how long it took to get to that super quick part where I was grinding it out at 100 followers, 300 followers, 1,500 followers. And that felt like a trog that lasted for, you know, years and years. And then all of a sudden it would be 1,000, 2,000, 5,000. And once the ball started rolling, you know, it picked up momentum. And I guess I started focusing on what was working and imparting as much value as I could every time I posted. And this was thankfully during a time when I guess Instagram was sort of blind to the content can't be recommended to your followers sort of guideline that they implement now. But a few of my reels caught some wind based on, you know, the creativity that I was trying to employ while putting out some value with those reels. And it caught a little bit of attention. And thankfully, that attention has allowed me to sort of focus my passion and my drive on sharing as much of the scientific data and knowledge that I'm able to come across with home growers and with hobbyists and enthusiasts in a way that's digestible that they can go right now and employ in their garden.
Well, very well said. I definitely took notice of the quality of your content, the effort in the production value that you did. And I think that's a big reason why you got noticed. Another reason why I think that people like your content is your voice. I mean both your actual voice, which is a good speaking voice, but also the words you choose to put behind your content. So your content is usually kind of like what I like. Back in the day when I worked for High Times, what I figured out working for them was that all the people that wanted to write for High Times, some of them were a writer, and some of them were photographers, and some of them were growers. There were very few people that were all of it. But anytime anybody came along and presented what I called the whole package, they presented a story with artwork, with, you know, narration, with the whole thing, they would get paid really well. And if you were piecemeal and you didn't have it all, you got paid. So it's kind of the same thing. You're putting the effort in, you're putting the time in to polish things, and that's getting noticed.
I think a big part of that comes from, as boring as it sounds compared to the product it produces, is my analytical nature just sort of tends to lead me to fragment pieces of the things that I'm trying to do and find ways to improve on specific functions of a whole system, whether that be the way I post on social media, or the way I employ different growing methods, or the way I try to run a business. It all comes down to every part of the system is important to the system as a whole. So if every one of those functions is running optimally, that system will run more optimally together. And I use that sort of mentality to think to myself when I'm posting, is this something that's going to resonate with X, Y, and Z in an X, Y, Z application? And there's so many ways to break down each individual person into each individual circumstance. One person might be growing in cocoa and another person might be growing in cocoa, but that person might be growing in a 1 gallon pot versus a 5 gallon pot under HPS lights or outdoors, right? So there's so many ways that I think about how can I specify this content to Joe exactly, as opposed to how do I make this content for 90,000 people? And thankfully there's enough Joes every time I post a reel that are looking for that specific information that it resonates with them while not alienating somebody else who tomorrow is going to get information that they find useful.
That's really cool. I'm glad I asked.
Obviously, being in my position can be polarizing, as I know you know. Often when you post, there'll be detractors and you know people specifically looking for attention, whether it's valid or not. And they'll attack different portions of what you're trying to say or what you're trying to do. And one of the big ones they like to do is that, like, I'm a corporate shill or I'm just in it for sponsorship. And my response to that has always been, I could have chosen to monetize this in a way where the information was, you know, by pay, but I found it more effective to be able to keep running this as my full-time job, to be able to provide the information I do to you, to be able to take on the people that I currently work with, that work in my garden, and that I feel confident supporting, and telling the people that they can feel confident in supporting as well, to help me continue run this operation so that I can provide them the information at no cost to them whatsoever. And I think that's the most effective way that I've been able to maintain this as a full-time job without it having any impact on the people I'm trying to share the most with.
You know, I can relate to that as well, because, you know, I came up through High Times Magazine, and I started an article called The Stash Awards, which was the significant technological achievement in Sensimilia horticulture. And it was basically products. It was a products article. And, that one was a 50-50 for me, because I got to choose. It was my article, so I got to choose who I put in it. But then some of them, of course, were shoved in my face through advertising. Absolutely. And all of that stuff. But throughout my tenure there, as a writer, as a journalist, every article that I wrote, I chose to write. And what people, what a lot of young people are missing is that journalism, and that's what you are, you're a journalist. Journalism is an actual profession. And like all professions, some people do it really well and are really proud of what they do. And other people do it for shit and will take a dime to piss in somebody else's mouth. So you can be as cynical as you want, but just realize that no matter how cynical you are, there are some people out there doing it for the right reasons. And if you don't believe that, what I'm getting at is that you, as a journalist, you make the choice. My choice is I only represent products that I will actually use myself. And I have already decided for many reasons in my heart that these are good products and that I want to recommend them. So the fact that I'm going to be showing these products over and over again and I take a dollar for them, to me, I'm sorry, that doesn't diminish my integrity. And so this whole speech for everybody out there listening, and for you as well, is that, you know, everything is not the same. Everything in the whole frickin' world is not bought and paid for. Even though it fucking seems like it is, it just isn't. And so that's why we have to choose good leaders, and that's why we have to choose good teachers. And that's why I have you on the show, because I believe you to be a good teacher. And, you know.
And I think it's really important. I think it's really important to point out that, you know, I do my absolute level best to make sure that even if I am using, you know, technology in my space that helps me get to the point and achieve the results that I'd like to help you achieve, everything I do is based on, you know, chemistry and biology and can be achieved without all of these technical things. They're just aids to help me do it more efficiently. So even if I'm showing you something that's, you know, say sponsored by whomever, the what's important about that post is not who it's sponsored by, but the information contained within that you can use without, with or without the sponsor, right? So that's what I try to do my best as is, even if my light company is up there as a sponsor for that specific post, the post is about, you know, a specific wavelength of light and how it impacts your plant during a specific stage of growth, not the light itself. So I try to do it in an organic way as possible for everybody's sake.
I think it's all about, you know, when you smoke weed, you're smoking the grower. And when you listen to a podcast about education, cannabis cultivation, it's about the grower, you know, and the grower has the person we've chosen to present these things for, right, hopefully a good reason. And so choose who you listen to. That's all. You can't just hate on everybody because they need to turn a dime to put gas in the tank. And the way that you or I do it happens to have something to do with our podcast. And you go, I've gone out to jobs too. So anyways, Justin, I'm really glad I was right in my estimation that you're a down to earth person. And I suggest that if you're not already following, you definitely give him a boost on his Instagram and check out his reels. The next couple of questions I want to ask you about are actual methodology questions. The first is something that you very recently put up. I don't know if you've talked about it before. And it's about the step down process for curing and drying. And I've always been an incremental kind of person, whether it's feeding, whether it's cycling, whether it's stepping down nutrients. But explain in just a couple of minutes, in a few concise, what the step down, rather than just throwing it into the 60-60.
I've always had a problem with 60-60. Always. Nobody could ever explain to me why it is we do it this way. It's just the way we do it. It's the best way. And I could never pin it down. And being the way I am, I had to find the answer. Why are we doing it this way? And it wasn't until 2019 that a study came out, really looking at what it was we were doing sort of commercially at scale to do this. And they looked at whether there was a better way to identify how quickly cannabis actually dries in which type of environment. And when I read it, it just made perfect sense. If you've got a soaking wet sponge, it's going to dry out really quickly for the first little bit. And then the middle of that sponge is going to take forever to dry out. And why that happens is because as the surface of the sponge dries out, those evaporative forces aren't pulling on the water anymore. It's now up to sort of internal forces of diffusion from the water being slowly pulled through those little pockets and fibers of the sponge instead of direct heat, airflow, light, and water adhesion where the surface water is pulling on the inner water. Now, the middle of the water is just trying to come out. So if we dry at 60 degrees, that surface water is going to get pulled out. And now we're at the exact same temperature trying to pull that middle water out, which is taking longer and longer and longer to get out. In order to mitigate this, you would obviously think, well, why don't we just dry it quicker? So a lot of the complaints there are that terpenes are volatile and they off-gas, and that will destroy the flavor and the scent of and aroma of your dried flower, and that you'll get chlorophyll not being broken down and getting locked in, leading to a hay taste. All of the data suggests that if you dry your plants in absolute complete darkness, the chlorophyll molecule begins to break down within 18 hours, and over the course of 3 days, exponentially breaks down more and more and more and more. So if we start drying our plants in the dark and at 70 degrees instead of 60 degrees, all of that water starts to come out within the first 18 hours. So now the chlorophyll starts breaking down, and we move on to step two of drying, where it's no longer that surface water, it's now the inside water. So if we kick up the temperature, which is still not off-gassing our terpenes based on the study, we can now pull that internal water out even quicker, but it keeps it at a constant rate because it takes longer to get from the middle to the outside. What we end up seeing is that over the course of 5 days, we step down from 80% moisture content in the flower down to our 12% safe levels for storage. If the study shows that terpenes don't off-gas until about 40 degrees Celsius, which makes sense because we grow them in around 70 to 80 degrees and they still have terpenes in them, we can dry our flower down without the risk of mildew, mold, and other pathogenic problems, while also preserving the maximum amount of terpenes. Because what happens is once the plant dehydrates enough, it's no longer as metabolically active. So it's not creating terpenes, and those terpenes are slowly starting to oxidize. So every day we go from the point it starts to dehydrate, that count goes down. The quicker we can get it off the rack into safe storage conditions, the higher we'll be able to preserve it at.
So what I pose is, so, you know, us growers up in Mendocino and the Emerald Triangle and shit, you know, when I first moved to California 25 years ago, we didn't have no drying, special drying containers and rooms, you know? And so what I've found over the years was that if you dry at a higher temperature, then you don't have to remove as much moisture from the room in order to prevent mold. So it's more natural. In other words, if I dry at 70 degrees, I can dry at 70% humidity. But if I dry at 60 degrees, I have to dry at 60% humidity.
So the key, you had it right on in the most anecdotal way possible. But and from a scientific perspective, you're absolutely right. And the key is equilibrium, relative humidity. And that's the point where the plant won't pull any more water out of the plant because it's fully saturated. The higher our temperature, the more water it can pull out, meaning the higher you can keep the RH without having to worry about things like mold and mildew.
I think that in my mind's eye, the ideal is as natural as possible, which is, that's a completely, you know, generic statement, because natural is natural in Jamaica or natural in Arizona or natural in Toronto. It's a completely general statement. But what I mean by that is the optimal state of the plant is where it's neither being forced to dry slower or faster, right? And so they're
exactly as it was intended to do.
Exactly, or maybe just a hint. You can slow it down just a hint, it's kind of the way I look at VPD. I see this visual in my head. When your VPD is right, well, I don't even know why I went. See, that's one of those things. Cut. I don't want to go. I don't want to cross over. Anyways, that was a joke.
Every single function of the plant is capable and has evolved to operate within a curve, right? It's got safe ranges on either side, temperature, EC, and it will function well up to either side of that curve. But there is an optimal, right? Now, when we look at 60-60, that's not necessarily something the plant has evolved to encounter.
What I would pose to you is, if you are an outdoor farmer, and I know plenty of outdoor farmers, would you be happy drying in your barn at 60 degrees? Probably not. You'd be worried that it's going to mold, right? And, you know, you'd probably put a little warmth in there. So again, if your plants are comfortable, you're going to be comfortable. It's about equilibrium.
Absolute most important imperative part of drying that I think all of us haven't really caught up to yet is just ensuring it's done in the dark. If your process is working for you, by all means, continue, but don't turn on any lights until your plant reaches a state of critical dehydration. It's still doing very much plant things, which means you flip on a light and any remaining chlorophyll is going to activate and start reproducing to photosynthesize, which means all of the starches, sugars, and molecules we're trying to break down, we've now just reset by turning on a light check on our plants, right? And we can do this in the dark with our phone LED, which is well beyond the 4 ppfd that activates those chloroplasts.
Exactly. That's what I was mentioning. You know, if you flick on a incandescent 75 watt bulb in the top of a room where I've got a tent and I want to zip open my dry tent, that's completely fine. What he means by is don't turn on a grow light. Don't turn on a grow lamp, you know, to initiate anything. That's, you know, we're simpatico on that for sure. The next thing that I want to give you a chance to explain to the average Joe, shall we say, is how we, the home grower, can benefit from what we call crop steering.
So this feels like such an overwhelming and intricate rocket science-y subject to a lot of people, and I understand that completely, because when you look, even when I post about it, I often post about it from a more advanced perspective. But at the end of the day,
Start off with a definition. Can you give me a 2 or 3 sentence definition? What is crop steering?
Is initiating targeted stress on your plant in order to initiate a hormonal response based on the conditions. So we can initiate either a developmental reproductive condition or a vegetative condition via the amount of stress we place on it.
So that breaks down into different levels of lighting and different levels of feeding. Correct.
So one of the easiest way to think about it is a daily cycle of wetting and drying of your root zone, which correlates directly, which we'll talk about after lighting. But when we think about crop steering, we want to think about the plant starting out the day dry, which means it's going to have to work really hard to get up any water once the lights come on and start transpirating. And if it has to work really hard to get water in the morning when the lights come on, it's going to think, uh-oh, I might be in trouble. I better start making some reproductive organs in order to get pollinated. So it's going to focus all of its hormones on that reproductive process, as opposed to making more leaves and stretching longer or stretching higher into the sun to, you know, get a better.
Is that regardless whether it's in veg cycle or flowering? Pardon? What you just described, is that regardless whether it's in the veg cycle or flowering, or is it specific?
Nope. So that works. There are some people who use a generative cue, which is initiating that stress during the vegetative phase in order to keep your plants more squat and more bushy, which is a very effective method of saving space if you're finding that your plants are growing really tall.
So what's the practical? What's the practical practice to affect that?
So the best way to affect that would be to ensure that whatever size medium you're having, that your water content in that media is drying down overnight to a point of you can lift that pot up. And it's like, if you don't have any measures, the lifting the pot up will tell you, yeah, that pot is dry. You want it to feel dry. And then as the lights come on, the plant is going to struggle to pull up water, and it's going to work really, really hard. And then an hour after the lights come on, after it's been, you know, lifting weights and pumping those muscles, we're going to give it all the water until we hit full saturation. So our pot's going to be fully wet now, and it's got that with that pre-workout pump on. So now it can take up all that water as the lights are on throughout the entire day. And just about an hour before lights off, we're going to cut the water off and start that process of drying down again.
That is very interesting. So this is not a process for a hand waterer in large pots.
So larger pots are more difficult. The larger the pot gets, the longer obviously that dry back is going to take. But again, it's all about managing that cycle. You can even apply crop steering strategies to soil to an extent by following those wetting and drying cycles throughout the duration.
FYI, that's what I used to call it was cycling. For 20 years, I taught it as cycling. The term crop steering had not been brought to the forefront in cannabis agriculture yet, and it was cycling. And so what I'm getting is I may not get to do that every single day, whereas if you had just the right size pot, you could literally do that every day, and you can put them in that state, and they get stronger, and they get stronger. So in my situation, I may do that every third day. But I do that. That is part of my methodology without even thinking I'm crop steering.
And it feels natural as it would in a natural setting, right? It'll rain and then it'll have a few days of drying back in a dry, hot season, and then it'll rain again. And that's, again, the way that hormonal response has evolved to function. So all we're doing is articulating that for our plants in the most precise manner possible, according to the data. And what I mean by that is when we apply those dry backs, what we're really doing is we're applying osmotic pressure. When water evaporates, ions concentrate, then we add more water that have more ions, and that ionic concentration builds in the root zone. So what we see is that the root zone gets saltier and saltier and saltier, right? And by increasing the osmotic pressure, we're increasing the amount of solutes the roots have to make in order to take that water up based on osmosis. So our plants specifically have been shown to function healthily and happily in a range of between 1 EC and 10 EC. So when you hear people running synthetic nutrients at 3 EC and you're like, whoa, that's really high, that's because we're applying a high frequency practice where the concentration's never building up past that 10 EC mark where it becomes dangerous and toxic for the plants, as it would if, you know, you were watering, not getting runoff, and starting to see build up over the course of a few weeks.
Very practical. I like the way that we got that out. So then the next aspect is lighting variation. Can you break some of that down?
Yep. So how lighting plays into this, obviously, is through transpiration and photosynthesis, right? When we're in a generative steer, we want to really increase the VPD, which increases the transpiration, which increases the amount of work the roots are going to have to do to keep up the water uptake. Increasing the light and photosynthetic rate will increase the stomatal openings. It'll increase the metabolic processing of the plant. So the plant is just working in overdrive. The higher the lights are, provided that they can keep up with that intensity. Now, when we talk about riding the razor's edge here,
what's a good way to tell when the plants are not putting up with that intensity when you've crossed the threshold? Yeah,
so a lot of the times you'll see some very physical manifestations. By that point, it's you likely want to catch it a little sooner. What you will see is often the leaves will start to turn down and away from the plants before there's any physical damage. So if you're starting to run intensities for too long over the course of an 18-hour day, you might start seeing by the end of the day the plants are doing this. And like a lot of people say that the plants are either going to sleep or that's part of metabolic cycling. But oftentimes it's the plants are saying, I've had enough light for the day. I'm just going to take it easy down here as far away as I can. And it's not necessarily damaging to the plant, but over time, what's going to happen is that excessive light heat is going to oxidize your leaf's cell structure, and it'll create free radicals, which in turn create that chlorosis that we see where we start seeing the brown spots on the leaves.
If possible, I think that the quickest way that you would notice is water uptake. Water uptake would slow. If you had a meter on that plant and you knew that it was taking 0.2 gallons every single day, and all of a sudden the next day it took 0.1 gallon when it was supposed to be growing faster, you would immediately know that
something was wrong. And that's part of the stress response of the plant is going to be, you know, this light intensity is too intense. I can't take any more in. It's going to shut its stomata down, which means the amount of water it's taking up is going to slow significantly, which is going to be counterintuitive to the fact that based on the high light intensity, it should be drinking more. So that would be a great indication to know that your plant's closing off on you here.
So back to, I'm assuming you're about to get to how fluctuating your light intensity is also part of crop steering.
So up until recently, there was a really great study done by a person named Chandra L. Out of the University of Guelph, I believe. And the study had determined the photosynthetic ceiling of cannabis. And what they found was that 1500 ppfd at around 1200 ppm CO2 at 30 degrees Celsius, which is 84 degrees Fahrenheit. That was the maximum photosynthetic uptake for their controls and their experiment plants, which was kind of what we've all gone off of since 2017. So if we can reach 1500, the safe limit's probably 1200 at 1000 ppm CO2. And that's sort of where we've all been working in that range. But in 2022, a new study came out that showed that if plants at a young age, if the leaves are hit with varying levels of light intensity, that photoplasticity increases and allows the plant to handle much higher light levels than previously thought. And it was shown that they were able to surpass 2000 ppfd without any photo bleaching whatsoever. I've personally never gone that far because that sounds crazy. I'm sure one day I'll feel the courage to get there. But just knowing how the physiology of the leaf behaves, because in nature it would see such a variance of lighting, that it's adapting to that light variation. Knowing that we can manipulate that into our favor by hitting it with 600 ppfd in veg, then 400, then 750, then 500, then 800.
How far apart would you have those differences? How many days or hours?
Over the course of a week, what I've tried to do here with success is I'll go, let's say, in veg. If my static line is 450 ppfd, I'll start it at, you know, I'll hit it for 650 for an entire day, and then I'll drop it down to 350 for an entire day, and then I'll bring it up to 750 for a whole day, then I'll bring it back down to 450, and it'll be a closing line, if that makes sense, towards the higher end. That way, when I hit transition of flower, I'm already at 1,000 ppfd with no sort of transition time. The plants are just ready to roll.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I've always
check that tidbit up on your board. I highly suggest you try that one.
I'm going to. I've always been at the minimalist on feeding, but a maximalist on trying to achieve a rate of photosynthesis, the highest possible rate of photosynthesis.
Well, and if you want to, if you wanted to imagine it as anecdotally as possible, think about it, you know, on some days outside, it's overcast and hazy and the people, right? So the plants have had to evolve over 50,000 years, how to deal with that. And I think the way was to adjust the plasticity to that adjusting light levels.
Or think about a bodybuilder. A bodybuilder every time is not trying to lift the most amount of weights, right? Sometimes it's maintenance.
Set, rep, absolutely. So that's when I read that study, it made the most sense to me. I said, well, why are we just sort of gradually climbing at what their limit is, as opposed to, you know, giving them a rest and recovery day and then really hitting them hard again, right? So once I implemented that, I started seeing success from being able to go, like I said, right to flowering transition at my peak PPFD and then never stop from there. Because we got to remember, right, as soon as we hit that 12-12 mark, we're on a clock, and every single day is counted in that race. So the more photons we can shove into that plant from day one, the better off we're going to be towards the end.
Very well said. And with that, I think I'm going to bring this interview to an end. Justin, I want to thank you for doing what you do so wholeheartedly. And I want to tell you that when it comes to whatever you perceive as other than positivity on the page that you present, you know what? If when you get to a point where you have some trolls and some haters, it just means you've made an impact. Because if you don't, then you haven't. And so, you know, there it takes all kinds of people to make a world, and some people don't know how to elevate themselves. So how are they going to possibly elevate a stranger? So they're bringing themselves down unwittingly while they're somehow trying to bring you down. Well, so that's my comment on all of that.
Getting that
and
support.
You keep doing what you're doing.
Getting that support from you means the absolute world. And, you know, I think I receive enough messages and comments and DMs from people telling me how I've leveled up their garden. And in some instances, you know, I've changed their perspectives or even changed their lives from, you know, the way they medicate or are able to medicate or help family members in those types of scenarios. That's more than enough outpouring to counter some of the negative stuff that I occasionally receive in comparison to the positivity. The community that I have around me is absolutely phenomenal. They're engaging, they're intelligent, they're passionate and driven. And I'm blessed and feel incredibly lucky to be able to have enough of a voice to reach as many people as I do. And I'm thankful for it for every minute I have it until I have it.
Oh, you're awesome, dude. Just keep doing what you're doing. You'll have it as long as you like. Well, we got to get going. This has been a really great interview. Me and Nate are about to head off to Barcelona next month. And when we get back, we'll definitely have you back again. We're going to be doing all kinds of great things over there. We're going to be judging the International Cannabis Awards. And I'm going to be doing a speech at the University of Barcelona on the importance of veganic cultivation. And we're going to be hanging out at Choco Lounge. That's where the VIP event is for the ICA. And so, yeah, man, thank you for your teachings, and keep doing what you do.
Much love, man. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate you.
Well, that was certainly a great episode. I enjoyed myself getting to know Justin from Shark Mouse Farms. I think he's an excellent educator, and I suggest you check out his page on Instagram. Well, we'll be back for another episode next week after we get back from Barcelona. See you then. Are you ready to take your cannabis cultivation game to the next level? Well, hold on to your buds, because we have an amazing offer just for you. Are you familiar with Strawberry Cough? This legendary strain has delighted cannabis enthusiasts worldwide with its mouthwatering flavor and uplifting effects. Lineage? Sure, let's dive into it. Strawberry Cough is a delicious cross between Strawberry Fields and Haze. Its distinct strawberry aroma and sweet taste make it a favorite among connoisseurs. Now, here's the exciting news. we're offering a fantastic deal on Strawberry Cough feminized cannabis seeds. You'll receive 20% off your purchase on any pack size of these seeds when you use code COUGH20. That's COUGH20. That's COUGH20 at homegrowncannabisco.com. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to grow your own strawberry cough. Whether you're a seasoned cultivator or a newbie looking to explore the world of marijuana horticulture, these feminized seeds will set you on the path to aromatic success. Visit homegrowncannabisco.com today and select from their wide range of premium cannabis seeds, and maybe take advantage of 20% off your strawberry cough seeds when using code COUGH20. Happy growing, folks! Get ready to savor the tantalizing flavors and uplifting effects of strawberry cough, a strain that deserves a spot in every cannabis enthusiast's garden. Check out homegrowncannabisco.com now and seize this offer before it's gone.